Toby Ciccini grew up in Wisconsin. His family still lives here. But he made his move long ago to the Big Apple. For the past 5 years, he's been one of the owners and bartenders of Passerby, a bar in downtown New York. And he claims to have reinvented the cosmopolitan, the cocktail that's such a hit now. Ciccini's collected some of his best stories in a book called Cosmopolitan, A Bartender's Life. He told Anne Strainchamps about his bar.
My bar is kind of a very odd little duck. It was conceived by Gavin Brown, who runs a gallery in New York City, and he asked me to help him put together a bar attached to his gallery, that being something that was just unheard of before. And I at first just told him, absolutely not. You know, that's such a bad idea. But he just persisted and persisted, and so eventually we put it together, and it's been 5 years now. It's a very strange place.
Why? What's strange about it?
It's a sort of undefinable place, really. It's built on, and the entire bar is built on a lighted disco floor. But it's a very, very small bar. It's about the size of a double-wide trailer. And every part of it is something that was contributed by one of Gavin's artists. The disco floor sort of brings people in. They think, oh, I get what this place is. It's a disco. But it's so tiny you can't really possibly dance in there. And the bar top itself is a gigantic slab, an entire walnut tree that was cut by the late Japanese furniture artist George Nakashima. And that's a completely different visual experience, and people go, oh, but wait, what is this? And then there are a few tables scattered about. It's a very high and low sort of thing. It looks kind of like a dive bar, and then it looks sort of like an artsy place, but the bathrooms are ripped apart and covered with graffiti. It's a very, I have problems describing it to people. They're like, oh, what kind of bar are you running now? And I say, you know, you just have to see it, I'm afraid.
Well, what kind of crowd comes in?
You know, that too is a very different thing. Early on in the evening, since I'm just a wine freak and I try to run a good wine list by the glass, I get a lot of sort of the wine lovers, and people just kind of want a quiet conversation with their friends and a little more of the fashion crowd. And then later on at night, we have DJs and the place starts blasting, and it drives the early birds out and brings in a lot of kids from, you know, Brooklyn and the East Village and whatnot, who want to just thrash about a little bit more. So it also runs the gamut there. Early in the week, it's much quieter. On weekends, I can barely stand to be in there.
So how wild does it get? Because, I mean, the late-night crowd you write about can be a pretty raucous crowd, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I try to write about some of the unsavory bits of bartending without making it seem like I'm too bitter. Maybe I am too bitter at this point. It gets pretty wild. I mean, when you get people together who have gone out to make something happen, really people want to see something happen. They don't really know what. They go to a bar for a reason, and that's seldom just to drink. So you've got people with this sense of anticipation and expectation, and they amp that up by, you know, adding liquor to the mix, and you get a lot of behavior that you really, outside of 2- and 3-year-olds, could never believe is going on.
Like what?
Well, you know, this is on the air, too. My mother's listening to this. So you get people taking off their clothes. You get people stealing things. You get people breaking things. You get people just doing things that you cannot believe. People are just walking out of the bar with the tables in their hands. And, you know, I'll stop them and say, what are you doing? And they say, sorry. You know, they have no idea often. It really is sort of, I liken it frequently to sort of running a daycare at times. It isn't always like that, of course. In the early times, there's some very, you know, intelligent and, you know, well-spoken people that I like talking to. But late at night, it all breaks down and it can just become unbelievable. It's like a certain circle of hell.
From some of the stories you tell in your book, it sort of seems like a certain percentage of the customers come in actually probably looking for sex. I mean, there's this kind of public promiscuity that goes on also.
There is a ton of that, and I wonder about that. It's invariably what it turns into. There's a certain point of the frenzy where it spills over into that, where there's enough people in the bar, it's really hot, it's really packed, people are drinking hard, and that becomes a thing. The music is incredibly loud. There's something about that that lets people shed enough inhibition that it does become at a point about sex. Whereas early in the evening, it can be about a lot of different things. It can be about argumentation. It can be about simply someone who might be lonely, coming out to talk to other people. There's a lot of gradations that lead up to that. But there is a certain point always in the frenzy where it just breaks down into like this raw, unabashed animal search for sex.
What's the most outré thing you've ever seen?
Man, I've seen a lot. I mean, I've caught people openly having sex in the hallways and whatnot, and just kind of stepped past them or said, "Excuse me," you know, to get into the restroom or whatnot.
Do you feel like it's part of your job to kick them out at that point, or do you just regard all this as kind of part of the floor show?
It depends. It depends. I feel like it's my job to keep people from hurting other people, or keep people from ruining the environment, or being really just grotesque. If they're, you know, trying to be hidden or trying, you know, it. I kind of have to play it by, you know, by the shades of gray. If I simply say, you know, could you not do that here? And they return to their table apologetically, fine, you know. I mean, if people are throwing pint glasses around, which happens, or just being really aggressive in a way that they want to fight rather than anything else, then it's my job to get them out of the bar, obviously. And those times come along, and that can get very scary, actually.
One of the things I found most remarkable about your book is how good-humored you stay about all this sort of behavior. For a lot of people, there'd be something soul-destroying about this, you know, for the bartender, to night after night see people getting drunk and stupid. But you don't find that?
I think I used to a lot more than I do now. In the first few years, it used to really get me down. And I used to think, you know, this is kind of destroying my faith in humanity. And then I just sort of hit a certain point where I decided I copped what I now refer to as my Zen bartender act, where I just sort of let it all roll off of me and realized, you know what, people are simply doing what they want because this is the way they get out all their pent up whatever, their aggressions, their sexuality, whatever it is they have to get it out. You have to realize that this is a repository for all of that. And if you want to work here and if you want to run it, you have to accept that. And you have to sort of realize that you're the animal trainer and you can't blame the animals, you know? And once I did that, it sort of freed me up to kind of just, you know, grin and bear it.
Do you think people go to bars for different reasons now than they did, I don't know, a generation or two ago?
I've been trying to find a way around this thinking, but I really do think that. I feel like in the entire past century, in the 30s, 40s, 50s and whatnot, I want to say pre-television, but maybe that's not the culprit. People went out a lot more simply to socialize. I feel like people went out with their friends or even with their families in groups, meet other families, and just sort of, you know, I mean, you can blame a lot of different things, deracination of America and whatnot, but I feel like people now, maybe this is just my corner of it, but I see people mostly just out there combing, you know, for sex and for thrills and for kicks. And I don't see as much socializing in bars as I feel like there used to be.
I guess many people drink because they're after oblivion or relief and they don't really care how they get it. And and other people want status. They want to be drinking the really cool drink of the moment. Are there really people who can taste the difference between a martini shaken and a martini stirred?
Oh, sure. Because if you shake a martini, which, you know, there are camps and camps that'll tell you which is the proper way to do it. I always shake martinis because I like them diluted. If you simply stir a martini, you're going to get an intense, intensely alcoholic drink. Whereas if you shake it, it dilutes the vodka down to a point where it doesn't bite you, vodka or gin, rather, whichever you prefer, to a point where it doesn't bite you so when you take a sip. That's easy to taste. A better question maybe, are there people who can taste the difference between a vodka and cranberry made with Grey Goose or made with Smirnoff? I don't think so. But people are happy to pay the $4 or $5 extra for Grey Goose right now because, as you say, that's the going thing.
Hmm. Well, take a drink like the Cosmopolitan, for instance. That's a drink that, you know, became very hip, sort of synonymous with Sex and the City. You invented it, or one of the people who invented it, and then watched it become incredibly popular, and I guess you watched other people begin making it badly.
And right.
So what do you do when you make a Cosmopolitan?
It's a really simple drink, actually, and the bulk of it comes down to fresh lime juice. I use citrus vodka because that's the way I sort of originally conceived of it. I used to use Cointreau in the beginning, but now I use triple sec because it's virtually the same thing, but much cheaper. If you get a really good triple sec, like Stock or De Kuyper, I mean, you get a good quality triple sec, a decent quality citrus vodka, and lots of fresh lime juice and a little dash of cranberry. That's really the whole thing. Shaken really viciously. It has to be shaken really hard so that that ice breaks up, dilutes the drink, makes it incredibly cold. You want those shards to just float on the surface of it. That makes it refreshing. It makes it interesting to the eye. And then just a simple twist of lemon above. It's actually a very simple drink, but people just demolish it.
Okay, so now what's a bad cosmopolitan?
The thing I see most often is just that people use Rose's lime rather than fresh lime juice. And it's just nothing like the same thing. You can tell because if you can see through a cosmopolitan, then it's not a cosmopolitan. It should be sort of opaque. It should have that not even quite translucent quality that a lot of fresh lime juice brings to it.
You tell this kind of funny story about how you invented the cosmopolitan, and then it became this really hip drink. And now you get people showing up at your bar, and they ask for a cosmopolitan, you make it, and they hand it back to you and say, no, you didn't make it right.
Yeah, I get that all the time. I think because people like things that are sweet. And I mean, there's no getting around that. And when I conceived of the Cosmo, I really wanted it to be something that was bracing and tart and fresh. And so I get that constantly. And I don't really even take offense anymore. When people say, this is wrong, this is way too sour, I simply go back and remake it for them with more triple sec. Long ago, I gave up sort of standing on my honor there. It's just something that I don't even bother laying claim to anymore as the inventor of the Cosmo. It just seems silly. I just remake it for them.
Toby Ciccini is part owner of Passerby, located in New York's far west Chelsea neighborhood. He told Anne Strangechamps that before he left the bar this morning, he'd needed to call on his Zen bartender self to deal with a toilet cistern that some bar patron had smashed to pieces. Ciccini calls his book Cosmopolitan, A Bartender's Life.